Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods. I am Hercules Invictus. Hercules and the Space Gods is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through our podcasts on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in Tim Beckley's paranormal anthologies, a variety of live and now Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space Gods supports, as do all our other initiatives, all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. Tonight, I'm very proud to present the wonderful couple, Mark and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. Our topic will be, who are the ancient gods? And today's show is dedicated to the memory of Timothy Green Beckley. And we will start by saying hello to Mark and Phyllis, and then we'll talk about Tim. Greetings and welcome.
Hi, greetings, Hercules.
Greetings, Hercules.
And everyone listening in.
I was apprehensive about Tim for a while now, and I asked several people who were usually in contact with him if they'd heard anything, and nobody had heard anything. So I wasn't surprised by your personal message on Facebook. But I'm very sad to see Tim go. He meant a lot, I know, to both of you and to me and to many other people as well. And you guys met because of Tim, and I met you because of Tim as well.
I know. Oh, my gosh, right? Yeah, we've
Known
him since 78 we met him, and he's been an advocate for us all these years. And we loved him. He's like our space brother.
Yes, most but, definitely.
Well, we just found out.
We
really
just found out from Nick too.
When we
and went to Facebook, Phyllis goes on Facebook, and we saw more, and we're like, oh my gosh, just now. It's all within the last 15 minutes.
But apparently, it must have happened yesterday.
Oh, I thought it was today.
No, I think it happened yesterday, but we just found out about it.
Yeah, I tried looking online. I couldn't get a lot of information. Somebody posted a quick article, but didn't really post dates, and they said there wasn't a lot of information to go on.
All right. The only person, to me, I figured would be Carol.
Or Tim Schwartz.
And Tim Schwartz. Well, Tim,
yeah, his buddy there.
Tim sent, yeah.
I guess we'll find out more.
I guess we will. I found out about Tim back in the 70s also. I remember I was in my late teens or in my mid-teens, and we were in New Brunswick, and I knew that that's where Inner Light Publications was sent from. So as a kid, I looked around New Brunswick looking to find Tim Beckley in Inner Life Publications. I wasn't successful, but I met him I believe in the late 80s, early 90s, when John Keel was still around, and he had the Fortean Society downtown. I used to go to that quite a bit. So Tim used to hang out there occasionally. And then for several podcasts and shows that I did, I reviewed Tim's books that he published, and also interviewed Tim on several occasions. Then when I started my latest round of podcasting, of course, Tim was one of the first people I contacted. And I wound up being in like 15 or 16 anthologies that he put out. It's been quite a journey. And he was one of the heroes I had growing up, because he, like Brad Steiger, they devoted their life to exploring the paranormal and writing about it, and that's what I wanted to do.
They're fantastic, man. Oh, my God. Brad and Sherry Steiger, Mike Luckman, all our buddies, and,
John Keel. Yeah. They're getting out just in time.
You know, John Keel lived a few blocks from us, and he used to come to some of our parties.
Yeah, he was great.
Oh, he was good. And
I liked after the 14th night, everybody used to go to a local diner and eat. There were all these weird conversations happening all over the place. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he used to be down in Broadway at a diner on the Broadway. I forgot the name of the diner. I've never been in it, but I would always see him in the window. I'd pass by. I'd be telepathically feeling, I'm going to see John today, and walking down the street. And I'd go by, or John would be walking right in front of me crossing the street. And I would take a different street one time, and again, he'd be walking in front of me. We would just laugh. he was fun. And Ingo Swann was close friends with John Keel, and very close.
So I don't know if I met Ingo. What was that?
You never met Ingo? It was hard to meet Ingo because he stayed in his house.
I might have met Ingo, but I don't recall having a conversation or anything with him because John had quite a collection of people gathered around him. So,
if John went to visit Ingo, probably, right?
I wonder if Jim ever met Ingo. Probably.
Maybe. Who knows?
He used to put on UFO events and things of that nature.
I don't know. I can't, because when we used to ask Ingo questions, he would say, nope, I never met that person. Nope. And we go, okay. So we don't know if Tim ever met Ingo, because we knew Tim, so we figured he would have told us when we talked about Tim. Right, Phil? Because we had parties.
You know,
he wasn't at the party.
I just thought of something funny Tim said once about life after death. He says, all I know is I hope I won't have to pay taxes. That was funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
It was funny. And he went through that phase where he was making those, exploitation movies for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember him at some point near there, and I reviewed a couple of his vampire movies, I remember.
We never saw any of those.
Well, he made some other movies that we all know about, but we never saw them either. We call them the Red Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
The Red Light District movies.
These movies weren't really in the Red Zone. They were in the Pink Zone. You know, there was some nudity in them. But they were like horror at the same time. You know, they were vampire.
Yeah.
They were Tim, basically. Just like his books. You know, I love the lurid titles on his books. And it was a thrill to me to be to appear in books with titles like Screwed by Aliens, you know.
Another close friend of Tim's was Peter Robbins, our other buddy. And
he's in there. He said hi. Apparently, we found out yesterday we were behind the we were doing too many things. We weren't really on the internet yesterday too much.
Too much at all, no.
Oddly enough.
So, he's going to be missed. He's one of our old space brothers, right? He's in space.
Right.
The joke is always, you know, I'm going back to the Star Command. Get out of here. But in truth, the crew is above the planet, and the different crews, not my crew, place, but the regular crews around here, the Alliance groups and Ashtar's friends and everybody, they're in that ships above the Earth that are very far up above the Earth, but they're there, stationed. They rotate with the Earth. They go along with the planet. That's how they move along. They're anchored, in a sense, with the beams that they use. And so we have the one over America, which is over 2,000 miles long, that ship. And that's where people go out of body and astral or will project or be taken there. And higher selves are working there, so people have their friends and higher selves are there. So if you're leaving to go visit that ship, anybody listening, you might meet up with your higher self to connect with you.
You know,
so there's one over Europe.
It'll be interesting to see where Tim gets, where he decides to go.
Mm.
Because, you know, everybody has a different version of their own heaven, right? And people that have a broader idea of reality will tend to go, you know, gravitate toward those levels where people are, you know, curious and thinking. And he was very curious. Is a very curious soul. And so it'll be interesting to see where Mark finds him. So if he's on a ship or, you know, what he's up to. Because he knew a lot of people, so.
Yeah.
like you just see him getting to the first realm of the heaven level where you meet your friends and family and pets and everything. And he's meeting his friends and, you know, parents, grandparents, whatever. And you go for about a couple days of a party or whatever they gather. There's different ways they do it. But you just
right.
see Tim going, okay, got a place to go, people see, I'm out of here for now. I'll be back later. I just see him doing that. He'd be out there going, Valiant Thor, where are you? You can call for Valiant Thor and his friends and they'll, his crew, and they can meet you there, but you got to remember, that's all.
Well,
I've been on his ship a few times. Oh, go ahead, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
On Valiant Thor's ship, the Victory One?
Yeah, Vector One. It is Vector One, from I remember.
I have memories of Valiant Thor and his mission since I was a kid. Before I heard of that other people had been in contact with Valiant Thor. And I meet people throughout my life. One I became friends with, and years later he shared with me his interest in Valiant Thor. So it's like, Valiant Thor keeps popping up, you know, on my life's adventure. So I was wondering if when I go, I'll meet up with Valiant Thor again.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know what I was thinking?
You can still meet him. He comes around.
If Tim gets into one of the ships, and somebody can say, hey, Tim, can you do a flyover?
That would be great.
Let me get a captain to help me here.
No, serious. I'm not kidding. He really...
I would not be surprised with Tim.
He did contribute a lot to the UFO... You know, even though some people will say, oh, well, you know, it was sensationalist, this and that. But, you know, half of the stories about ufology, I guess you call it, are sensational.
Right.
And it's just that they've kept a lid on the truth for so long that, you know, it, with this whole idea of nuts and bolts, that it's ludicrous, really. It's ludicrous how people have been dumbed down to, you know, explore further, or even the people that, let's say, Bud Hopkins was working with, even though he didn't like our happy view of extraterrestrials, because he knew that there were a lot of really nefarious ETs out there that were, you know, allowed to run experiments on the population. But that was sensationalized, so nobody in the mainstream would give it any credence, and it's just been like that all along.
Well, Tim did everybody a service by publishing these stories, and if they were sensationalized, a lot of people would, of course, dismiss them, but they'd read about them because it was entertaining. So in his own way, he opened the doors to all this information, and he kept it flowing into our popular culture, as he did early on with the Inner Life books, where he published like really obscure and out of print metaphysical books that otherwise would have been lost. You know, Tim kept them kept them in circulation.
We just thought we would all go to get. You know, we thought he would be there till the end.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim is the one who republished the Valiant Thor, Stranger at the Pentagon.
Yes.
And that's how I was able to get a copy of it, because I had seen a copy but never owned a copy.
He got me the copy. During one of my moves, but I had a copy years ago, and then it disappeared. But Valiant Thor keeps popping up throughout my life. So
I know, right?
Yeah,
it'll probably be popping up a lot more in the coming years.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, from what I've gotten on the other side when I was out there, he told me. He does show up around Earth, but he's kind of incognito. He goes around, checks things out. So unless we recognize him in his earthly look when he comes through, the way he looked kind of like in the 50s, he's going to look similar, that then we'll know. And we could probably speak to him telepathically or say, I know it's you, or something. I'm always whenever we're in the park, which is rare now, I used to be out there, and I was wondering, okay, if I see a guy looking along, you don't see these type of looking men walking along the park in a business suit. So he could be in total incognito, no business
right.
suit. That's what I'm assuming, even though the guy I met had like a suit-looking attire on too. But for Val Thor, I know there's people out there, and I think people listening in know some of the people I might be talking about out there, that are saying things about Valiant as if he doesn't care about people on the earth, he doesn't give a hoot about them, and doesn't want anybody to use his name, it's a Val. You know, things like that. I know this is a play. I know this is not true. So
right.
I don't know where they're getting their information from. But he totally, when I was with him, he always would say, he's like Ashtar and the other friends and alliances out there who are different beings, like Kantimara, people like that. So there's other beings out there, and they care about the soul progression and the spiritual progression of the souls on the planets, and especially on a dense level like this. So they care about the people of Earth. So a person like Valiant saying or whatever, implying that he doesn't care really much about people of Earth, doesn't give a darn about it now. I was like, whoa, that's not what he would say. He would not do that. So I think people right now, and psychics and mediums, all these people, I think some of them are getting played by the tricksters who can manipulate, transform themselves into looking like a person like Valiant Thor or anybody. You know, they can look like anyone they want to transform themselves to look like on that side.
Right.
And trick somebody. You know? I mean, this is the level. This is where they are. This is their game down here. We're on their planes. Our home is higher up. We're on their plane. Right, Phyllis? You know?
Yeah, we're playing.
Phyllis and I call it the low, like
it's
a there, low-grade the home, hell realm.
The home team is Earth, hell for Earth. You know,
it's a hell realm, and we can make it a nice place to be if we're here, but you got to keep your mind high on Creator. But then we get tricked, we get harassed, we get played, we get manipulated by these beings.
Because they have the rules, they have the authority to do it.
On this level.
You see, that's the thing that people don't understand, that they have full authority to behave as badly as they want to because it's their realm.
They were cast in this level. That's what made, the levels were made for them. And so when we played in them, now we're going under their rules. And if anyone... I know they read things, you know, but that's what Yehoshua meant when he said, "This is not my realm." He actually said it. He said, "This is not my." They said, "Are you the king of this?" He said, "No, not this realm, but there's somebody else in charge of this realm that was given that authority for them to have their. This is their place, and you know who that is, everybody. The being of this, who they call their quote false god, but that's what they call it down here." So we got to be careful and be operating properly here. So,
well, what we're saying is deception is everywhere. So a lot of mediums are deceived, but they don't know it, and they don't test themselves. So just, you know, when you hear information, listen and see how it feels.
Yes, in your heart.
It's very important because you don't know who you're speaking to. And our terminology may differ. Like my background is very theosophical. So these are the lower astral realms. You know, that's another thing, you know, the hell realms. But this is a place of imagination. It's a place of dream. It's a place of emotion. And things are misleading. So if you don't know how to discern and if you can't spiritually navigate, it's very easy to get caught up in some spiritual drama, you know, that's playing out on these realms. Now, we had started talking a couple of times about the gods of antiquity, and I was really interested in your perspective on that, and I'll share my perspective on it as well. But the ancient gods never went anywhere. they're still here. And they're still interacting, and they're still very involved with humanity, and they still care about humanity. And I remember when Eric von Doniken's Chariots of the Gods first came out.
Yeah.
He didn't mention it exactly, but I knew from my study of mythology that the ancient Greek gods had robots, and they had flying vehicles, and they had devices, you know, similar to our computers. And, you know, so that's all preserved in the mythology. And Hephaestus, who made the things for the gods, whether it's the jewelry or weapons or armor or decorative things, he had androids assisting him at his forge. So all that stuff that I grew up with in mythology that was taught to me by my family and my Greek parochial school, and then in the comic book, especially Marvel comics, you know, they had all those elements there, and they made Olympus kind of like they did Asgard with Thor. It was kind of like an outer spacey realm, and you know, Jack Kirby and his Eternals. So I grew up with those images, and that, again, allowed me to understand a lot of things that I might not have otherwise understood correctly. So I pass the baton to you, and I'd love to hear what your particular beliefs and experiences and knowledge is.
Whoa. Thank you, I guess. I do, thank you. But I'm going to come around from where I am from.
Sure.
That I understand the mythologies and the histories and as much as I can. I've not totally studied it deeply like you have. But I remember, you know, definitely reading about it. But the thing I knew when I was reading certain things, too, was things were off. And what the real knowledge, what I know from past times, from before here, is that these, I know the Earth people at the time called everybody, anybody who had any kind of energy or any kind of mystical stuff that was going on that looked to them like magic.
Or advanced technology.
Right.
Yeah, it was advanced technology, but it might have been magical to them. So to them, they thought these were gods, and that was their best way, because in ancient times, they believed in many, many gods. In those times, so they were just always attributing, giving attributes to different beings or representing things. But these beings that we're talking about, like the ones that we know the names of, that for ancient time mythology, were actual real beings who visited this planet.
Yeah.
Now we gotta say 50,000 long time ago, Earth time, or 30,000 years plus. So and they're tall beings. These beings came from space. They were colonists too. Some of them. And they liked to set up certain places to have bases. That's what it meant. It wasn't like they were planning to stay here forever or on the planet, but they used bases, and they had bases set up so they could travel and go different places. And Earth, and as well as other planets similar looking to Earth that are in our galaxy as well, other galaxies too, but we have planets that look similar to Earth, whether water planets or semi-water planets, and they have minerals, some that are a little similar to Earth and some that are different. Maybe there was a few that are not of the Earth, and that might be what they might have found in the UFOs they found crashed. They say, we've got Earth minerals here, this metal here, but this is something else, because it was a combination of that, of Earth-known metal maybe with their metal from another planet, another mineral of some kind else, because there's different kinds. So they were visiting the planet, and I'm telling you this from my over part and the crew, as well as my own memory, but I have my memory from before I came, but also what the knowledge that they have to tell us as well. It's not just me knowing all this, but I am telling you I did know about these other beings who were very tall people, and I used to be part of a Therian race that came from Arcturus area, and there they ranged 20 to 50 feet tall if you can't stood on Earth. So now you know we're talking God-like beings, but they're not gods. But they seem to be because of the Earth people's mind. And they see this, they go, whoa, they have all this and the technology. They didn't the word technology didn't exist for them, but they saw it as, whoa, right? Magic or beyond that, the gifts of the creator or the gifts of the gods, right? That's how they would see it. And remember the golem? Remember they talk about that golem in the ancient histories? That would have been more of a robotic being. That they would have seen, they wouldn't have understood on those days. Yeah, they wouldn't have understood that. And that's what they're telling me to say right now, that those, that some people were given maybe words to say that they trusted, the beings trusted. Maybe they trusted this human. And they might have said, use these words to activate that, right? Uh-huh. Or maybe they had the words and the sounds, whatever the sounds and words were at the time. And so they might have had that being or that thing or robotic thing working for them to help them. And it might have been tall, maybe 5, maybe 10 feet or maybe 20 feet tall. Maybe this thing was to obey and do what they said. But I'm just roughly throwing different things out that I know I'm hearing and also I remembered from when I was visiting the planet, and we were very tall, and we visited dinosaurs. We saw these creatures that Earth calls dinosaurs now, but we could help them if they were hurt. And I wasn't like my height now or anything here. I was equal with them in different heights, and sometimes we were taller than some of them. So the way animals react to something bigger, they get nervous, they calm down, they get, or they're going to hide. So we were telepathic and could help with them. And some of these creatures that we might see as a Allosaurus or when they want to kill things and eat it, or like wolf or something, which I love wolves, but they would be more timid when they saw something way bigger than them, so they're going to hide.
Right.
So we could communicate with some of these too, and they weren't as vicious as everybody thinks they are. Like if you could communicate telepathically to a tiger or a lion and calm it down, it might come up to you and act like more like your pet friend. So we had things like that happening with some of these creatures, which were mammal-like, more like to me when I remember them, not all alligator, crocodile type, cold blood. So these beings that were known as the gods were ancient beings, ancient alien, let's say, and some were probably Aetherian coming into here with using a physical body, to make a physical body. And that would be where they might fall into the stories of the families of sons and daughters and things like that, of the gods, let's say, quote-unquote gods, right? So they might have had all that going on, but then I'm told also a lot of it was a story build-up to make a journey with it. A more hero thing going on with some of the stories. So they did good things, but then the people embellished things too to make it, actually make it more of a story, I guess, to tell their ancestors to trust these gods or this and that. So there's whole different stories that go with them. And when you said Hephaestus, that probably was, what I remember, there was beings like that. And they did come through and help with certain things like forgings and metallurgies on the planets when they came to make colonies or settle in spots. And like Olympus, the mountain would have been a high realm area where they could come down with an ethereal ship. That would be the big cloud effect that occurs around the mountains, as you see. And a lot of people say, oh, I know there's a spaceship over that mountain, but I've seen them form their clouds. And being with them anyway in the times of Moses, where I was actually one of those clouds in a cloud that was a pillar, one of the pillars that they were guiding them through the desert at night. There were two pillars. And I was a little kid and I told my mom that. I saw part of a movie. And I remember people following the cloud, right, on the movie, with the Moses movie, one of these movies. And I said to my mother, I was in the cloud on the... If you looked up, I was in the left cloud. So she was like, what are you talking about? I said, well, we were shooting, we had a beam that looked like a lightning beam that looked like light, and we helped them steer them in the desert. And also the mana that fell from the sky was also manifested, too, with the ships that they can do that. They might call them angel hair some of these other places.
I remember the dinosaurs. I wrote about this as a kid. I wrote about it a lot. But I remember coming here, and I remember the Earth had dinosaurs on it. And I remember that we could project our consciousness or part of it into the dinosaurs and see through their eyes. And, you know, that there was experiencing, you know, the different life forms here from their own perspective, as well as communicating with them. I remember. And,
and were you one of the tall people in the visiting the Earth at the time?
I was one of the tall people visiting the Earth, and also Aetherian. Yeah, they there weren't these hard lines like we have now between this and that, and people were aware that they were multidimensional and existed on several levels. So you were who you were on the level that you were on, but then you were who you were on the higher levels, you know, as
right.
well. And consciousness exactly. could move freely between those places. And yes, that contributed to a lot of the stories, and a lot of it is storytelling, you know, that grew on with culture, because these tales exist
yes.
in different cultures, and every culture put their own spin on it and their own flavor
yes.
added to it. And
a little embellishment, yeah.
Yeah, but if you could look beyond Both. The surface, the core is the same in all of these stories. And I'm very lucky in one way. In that I have like recordings inside my head, and one of them I have before me. The other one I'll see if I can find online. I published it on one of my websites a while ago. Let's see here. I think here it is. Yeah, I'll share one with you.
Okay.
I first started having this vision when I was a small child. And it's been with me ever since, and it's there whenever I close my eyes. It plays itself out. So I'm very familiar with this vision. It starts off with, I glimpse the top of a mountain shrouded in mist. Hovering on high, I can discern the ruins of an ancient Acropolis complex in the timeless twilight. I wait alone, formless in the silence. In time, a lone figure, powerfully built and clad in the skin of a lion, makes his way toward the abandoned temple of the highest. His hair and beard are still mostly brown, though streaked with white and gray. In his right hand, he wields a knobby club studded with bronze. My consciousness enters this figure, and henceforth I see through his eyes. I know that I am now Hercules, son of Zeus and progenitor of my line. Entering the fallen structure, I move through it unerringly until I reach a rectangular stone table, a long-neglected altar to the Olympians. Upon the altar is an antique horn from a heavenly bull, I tell myself. I then realize that I've been here many times before and that I know exactly what I must do. The horn is of monstrous size and etched with arcane glyphs. Some of the etchings are inlaid with a silvery metal. I put down my staff, cautiously lift the artifact to my lips, then blow into the smaller end with all my strength. The bellowing call echoes through the firmaments. With the horns of summoning still in hand, I exit the temple and peer purposefully into the murky skies near where I myself once hovered. I can detect faint presences, spirits that have answered my summons who will help me in carrying out my Olympian mission. Some take on form while others remain formless, but this I know, all who have responded will assist me in some unique and important way. And with this realization, the vision begins to fade. I am blessed with a brief glimpse of the ruins restored to their former glory. The sky is lambent, blue, and clear. There are mythic beings engaged in joyous activity, I myself among them. And I realize that this is Mount Olympus, my eternal point of origin and return, my heaven and my soul's true home. And this, I'm going to go back to a conversation we had one time, I believe either on the a podcast or on the telephone, where it's some part of you doesn't leave your heaven. It's still there, and it's active there and living there. And it projects or overshadows, or no matter how you want to describe it, things that are here, so that you're who you are on various different levels. And the more aware you are of this, the more multidimensional your experience of life becomes. And if you're not aware of it, then you're stuck wherever you are, or you think you're stuck temporarily at least, you know, wherever you are, and you live the stories and dream the dreams and go through the ups and downs and the experiences that are held there, that repeat over and over and over again. And the theosophists actually have they have a lot of records of the ethereal nature of some of the Olympians. And just like I found with Unarius Academy of Science, they preserve a lot of the inner and outer space lore about the Olympians. The Theosophists preserved a lot about the hierarchy of the Olympians that's still active in the earth. And that's where my interest stems from. And I don't know very much about Astar Command. I found a book called Space Gods Speak that was an Astar Command book that had the Greek gods in it. And even though there was a lot of it that was off and there were many mistakes in it, the core of it was what I knew to be correct. So when I was working with Tim Beckley on the book of his with Astar Command, that's when we connected. So that's been a very auspicious thing in my life, and it led me to you. And I'm very grateful to Tim and to the universe for doing that. So I just figured it's time for me to learn what light you can shed on this so they become part of the thing that I'm doing.
Well, you know, I have a question because you're so entwined with that physical and ethereal idea of what you actually are. I think Mark had said that you actually were Hercules.
Yes.
There was an aspect of you that
yes.
was...
Yes. I was just going to tell you what you
said. On some level, yes, that's true. But most people
now, what you just
said that, but on a higher level, that's true.
Yes, it's true. One aspect of what you were just speaking, when you read that, I was watching everything. I saw you pick that up. I saw you put it to your mouth, just like we have the ability, or everyone does, to see
right.
through the eyes of their brothers and sisters. If it's just a consciousness, it's just a blend of that energy. It's not like you're taking over the body. But there are times where you can be inside the body and with animals as well, which I've done as a child too. So we can do that. It's a thing we can do. It's who we are. We, like the space people have always said, when you see yourself through your brother's eyes, you know you're one, meaning one with all
right.
we are as children of the Creator, and we can do that. But when you described your story and you read it, and you say you were a child, right? But all it was a memory of the vision of truth of what you are, who you are. So you were awakened to that part, even though you're maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years old. You are hovering. You are in memory right there. In the time happening now, it all happens now, right? But with the
right.
day, at that time, you saw that, and you're hovering, and you're looking, and you saw, and you were, let's say, it's like visiting, I don't want to say it this way, but it's almost like when you go visit the Akashic frequency, you can also go in and experience a re-experience
right.
of you. Now, people listening, if they went to the Akashic frequencies and went back to the 14th century or 15th century, and they saw Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo, and I know that being Michelangelo. So if you saw them and you said, oh, there they are, or there's Michelangelo working on Sistine Chapel, and you're at the Akashic frequency. Now, Michelangelo, the being, his soul, is not there. It's the Akashic frequency. It's a memory for him as well as a frequency. So we can experience a little of what he felt or saw. So we can
right.
go, I want to feel what he felt, and go and lay on our back for a moment and look in that frequency and just see how he saw things. And sometimes you can even feel what he thought. So this is how Creator has led us all to experience through each other, and as well as other beings as well. You know, that's a person from another galaxy can come visit Earth and our frequencies here and see the Akashic frequency of an Earth planet, what the Earth history is in the Akashic. You could go visit Mars the same way, or Saturn, or another galaxy, another planet system. These are like little, what in space we call telloids. Telloids are things that have all the information within them. Today, a psychic will read them, a commentary, and you pick up a stone, and it'll tell you where it's been. And the planets themselves, this is from them. Hercules, they're telling me to tell us all this, even though I know some of this from me. I know this, some of it I know. Phyllis knows some of this, but they're telling me to tell us for the first time. I'm hearing this part as well, in memory for me and you and Phyllis, and anyone listening. If this sounds familiar, it's because it is true. It's your memory.
Yeah.
But okay, so the planet systems, the dense planets, as we are on right now, physical density, 3D, first plane
mm-hmm.
level, as we call it on Earth, Earth plane 1, this is the heavy, densest, solid form you're going to make on and be in any part of the galaxy's universe. This is the plane that's the heaviest, densest. This is where we feel so slow and heavy And then you get to the other side, you're light, and you feel great. And you get to an etheric level, you're still lighter. You know, we're lighter than this density. And that's
right.
Why when they manifest in, like our friends or Balzan or even in Dalthor, Dalthor is used to it. But others who are first-timers, when they come in to form a body physical from an etheric realm, they feel like they're in mud and cement with boots, you know, walking through the planet here. Until they get used to it, they gather strength and understand that that works for them. And that's why some of the people, when they come to visit Earth from other planet systems, they come through, walk through, maybe work here for a couple of weeks or a month, and then they have to go back. They have to go back home. They have to go reconnect. Like Valthor was basically teleporting back and forth to the ship to reconnect, to be regenerated in his energy. He has to be home. That's his home. As we feel as souls, we want to go home, and we're here on this sojourn. So what you saw, you were hovering above the cloud, and you were coming through. That's you as the over part, and we know there's different oversoul parts. I was trying to explain this one time to people, but it's hard for them to fathom it right now. So we say we don't want to go oversoul one, oversoul two. We don't want to say that. But higher selves are aspects of the oversoul in
mm-hmm.
working in our galaxy, in the systems, right? We have an oversoul here that's oversouling or being the main link for home to us, our true self, in this galaxy, in the solar system. In outer, deeper space, we have another link that is our other higher form of oversoul. It's another oversoul, but they're all connected. It's not even that they're higher form. It's just that they're spaced. Like, remember the salt shaker. The oversoul is the salt shaker. If we have other salt shakers in the oversoul, giant salt shaker, that's all the aspects of the oversoul. And then the salt grains would be the higher selves they're pushing out to be in these different areas to experience as well in lower frequencies. So the oversouls are usually on the highest frequencies, the highest 12th and higher. And then the higher selves will be projected to work through certain frequencies under the 12th and coming through. So people going out of body might connect to their higher self version of them, their true self connection, that is on a 10th, 9th, 7th, goes like that. I came in as a higher self form, and I don't act like one, but sorry, because I'm on planet Earth. but I connect to my over part, who is here in this galaxy, in the solar system, and when I go to the Arkvana to connect. So now I'm going back to you. Your over part in the ship, around the ship within our solar system, because you were here projecting to come in, and your soul, and you were a child having that vision, which was not a vision. It's a vision to us, but what it was to tell you who you are again. It was to give the wake-up call to you, for you to remember. And that's why it felt so true and real, because in reality, you already walked that path. You did walk the path, but you were reconnecting because you came in now as Hercules in this life, right? You came in as a child, so now you're like reconnecting the memory, and you were hovering above, and then you were one. You went right into the body to re-experience it again, and you felt it all physically, like you were right there. That was your re-experience of, this is you, this is who I was, this is who I am now still. So now you reconnected, and you did that. This is what they're telling me, to tell you this. Because I can interpret dreams, but they're telling me this to let you get more clarity, because I was hearing it as you were speaking it. I was seeing it, and I was like, whoa, wait till I tell him what he's going to do. The thing is you are from space way back, just like we were, all of us, everybody listening. No one's from Earth. They're all other places they come from. And it depends on how long you've been here for karmic reasons. That makes you feel like you're an Earth person. But once we've lived on this planet, like now, when you go out to space, into other places after we leave here, like Tim today and yesterday. Tim is out there right now. He's going to say to people, I came from Earth, my last spot. They're going to go, whoa, you went from that dense planet, that heavy planet. They know it's a karma planet. They know it's boot camp. And they honor, and they think, whoa, you went through that planet. I could not get to a planet like that. Some of these space beings and other people out there have been able to get to a heavy, dense planet like this, to have one life, just one, because they know one life on this planet is like, oh my gosh, like, what is it, like 800, 900 ethereal lives, you know, like, the equivalent of, you got this dense level boot camp on one life, it's better than taking a bunch of ethereal and high and mid-low ethereal lives and just gather one Earth life, you've accomplished a lot and passed through. If you can pass it really good, you know, without murdering and killing everybody in sight, you know, you're doing good. But and keeping a positive attitude as best you can on this planet, and loving everyone as best you can, you know, no matter what they do. So you came from your higher aspect, higher oversoul, who projected, you know, your higher self part to be in this galaxy, or actually in the solar system. We got the solar systems, because you can have another higher self in another solar system in our same galaxy. And it might be an Aetherian who you can meet up someday flying overhead, you know, hello, and it's yourself, but waving to yourself, but until you meet, you connect and you see it all. So you came through, I see it when you hovered, you're out of body, right? You're out of body, soul projecting. And you're a child, doesn't matter, we're soul projecting, and you're going, whoa, this is that familiar place. This base called Olympus is the base on planet Earth that was ancient and still exists, whether people see it or not, doesn't matter. You could see it as a vision, but it once existed, yes. It still is existing on other realms. And there might be remnants of it, and like you say, pieces like of Atlantis that still show up here and there. And it exists like that as well. But it is still there. And that's where you go when you're out of body or when you are, you know, connecting with your higher self aspects too. I feel that you are really part of your higher self right now. And you just connect there because that's base. That was base when you were here. And it's a familiar base. So other people might have a familiar base somewhere in Tibet, let's say. They might say, oh, I was in Tibet. I feel comfortable there. That's where they feel it. But your base was here at that time and now. The feeling is home right now at that area for you. And that's why you were born in that area, so you could reconnect and get the strength that you needed now that you're going to take. You gather that strength like a battery. It's like a battery because you were there. And I understood this before I came in, that my experience on planet Earth, I never had life here. This is my first time. I only walked on it as an Aetherian. But there was no real base for me to say, oh, yeah, okay, that feels good to me, that place there. That's why people are drawn to certain countries or certain places as power spots or feelings of antiquity of power or energy or where they felt good, like in a battery pack. That's my space. Italy's my space, you know, things like that. So that's what it means. But you, okay, back again, they're showing me you're hovering over. You come through the cloud. You saw the cloud, that energy that was around the Mount Olympus. And that was an ethereal craft that's invisible to the humans, but appears to be for them to see as a cloud energy. So even though the ship's not physical solid in that cloud, people can't say, well, there was nothing there, I didn't see anything. No, it's in the frequency of it, and they're utilizing the ionization field or that plasmic field shield to show the cloud is there. That's the sign to the ancients, including the ancient Hebrews, that the cloud manifested on the mountain. That means God's there now. That's what it was, the symbology for them metaphorically, but in truth, they were there in the ethereal ship. And so that meant that people would say, I'm climbing the mountain, I'm going to go up to get close as I can. Well, and when you watched from the cloud and you went through the clouds of the Olympus to the mountain and you saw the ancient structures and you saw Hercules coming through in the ancient look, right, from that ancient thousands and thousands of years ago, I'm saying 10,000 maybe more, of those ancient times. And it would have had to have been a giant cave lion, a giant 12-foot cave lion to be the skin around you at that time, unless you were 15 feet and something tall, right? You can think about it, or a couple of cave lions. And because to put these clothing on the people that were 20 feet, 50 feet tall would have had to be many skins put together of earth animals, unless we're talking massive giant animals that existed ancient times too. So when you blended in and melded in to Hercules walking and then gets to the altar table and you saw that beautiful horn inlaid and when you think about those horns, there are massive cattle from Africa that have these giant horns.
Yes.
That we saw up in Connecticut, one of these cattle, that steer was like Pleistocene when you look at this animal. It made no sense. It's not a cow. It's something bigger than an auroch. It was huge.
Yeah.
And its horns, Phyllis, remember the horns? The horn alone was more than 8 feet, 10 feet long things going up. I would say, how does that get in the barn? But giant, he gets in there somehow. His shoulders from the ground up, he was like eight feet or more. Anyway, huge. So we know that there's these ancient creatures that were here. And when you walked into the melded with your body as Hercules, you felt connected because you were then as you are now. And that's what's going on here. You're now you, even though your ancient you is long on the other side and up on the other realms and the higher realms, but you're connecting to you. And so this is what you came through as an aspect to connect, reconnect to you of that earthly energy that was here, and you were brought to be born in Greece areas and to learn about all that energy and information. So you can be that reconnection now for the souls who have been in past times and maybe have come back again now and are going to recognize. And that's what you mean by when you say, I'm putting the call out, the horn was the clarion call, right? The clarion call. That's the call to not just earth humans, but to the souls of the times, from other times, who are in the area. And they're going, we're coming together now for a very important time on this planet system right here. Not just Earth. We're talking the solar system, too. And so we got where you can manifest in this body right now. This is what they're telling me to tell you. I've never heard this before for you. And I'm just telling you, this is, you're here right now representing who you really are from the highest density, highest levels of the true you who was walking, I'm telling you, 10,000 or more years ago, and or more, 20 years, probably 20,000 years. But remember, Atlantis is older than they think it is.
Yeah.
Atlantean times. And that's when you were around, because in Atlantean times, there were tall beings walking the area. And they wasn't always in one area. They were just in different places, you know, like maybe ancient African areas. But this is the times that it always felt. When I heard or read anything about ancient mythologies, I said, whoa, that was way, not now, 5,000 years, not 6,000 years ago. This is way back when the tall people came in, when we were here visiting too. I'm not surprised. I think we all knew each other as Aetherians on that time coming from the dinosaurs.
You know what I'm getting? I don't know if you could verify this. I'm getting that all of the work that the Hercules is doing now with his broadcasting and his intentions,
clarion calls,
is really like the sum total of that soul's mission down through time, and it's coming to sort of a crescendo in this lifetime.
Yes, we're all here for a reason. We're all here at this time. And anyone hearing this broadcast with Hercules, any of Hercules' broadcasts, is hearing a call. And it's not just any call. It's a call to arms, in a sense of getting it known, getting truth out there, getting to understand who, all of us, who you really are.
Basically wake up.
Yeah, it's a wake-up call. Because we need it.
We all
Earth needs it bad right now.
But we only have a few minutes left. I wish this conversation could continue.
No.
But we will be together again at the end of the week, so with another conversation. I really enjoy speaking with both of you. I consider you to be very dear friends. Love you. And
love you, too.
The journey will continue. I would love for you to share how people can find all the wonderful things that you're doing and have done and how they can contact you.
Okay, we're on Facebook as Intergalactic Mission, or Mark Brinkroff, I guess. And we have the intergalacticmission.com, and we have etuniversalzone.com. And all those emails you can reach us at, I think it's just markbrinkerhoff@yahoo.com. And we also have the art site. My art site's markbrinkerhoff.com. It's an animal art site. You'll see dinosaurs and things.
It's wonderful.
But all those sites have a connection and a link to get to us in some way with the email or to the ET Universal Zone or
so whichever one they remember.
It's whatever you remember.
And also you can follow Mark on Facebook.
Yeah.
As you can follow Hercules on Facebook.
Yep. And yes, I was just going. I think I always get myself confused on Facebook if it's Intergalactic Mission.
No, it's just your name.
It's just my name. Okay, it's just Mark bringing up on Facebook. Thanks, Hercules. That's how they catch us. And you know, I could tell you more, but I feel well. You can always ask me anyway. You can ask me if
sure.
I saw some more because I did. And I'm telling you, you are connected right now, and you are. In the form you're in right now.
So what we're saying is you are actually hearing the voice of Hercules when you listen to Hercules.
That's right. This is the real person that was really Hercules in the ancient times. The being that was has come back.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So gather your bootstraps.
And this was a very special show, and I personally got a lot out of this, and I thank you so very much for that. It's not every day. Someone gets to hear the words of celestials and Ethereans during the course of a podcast. So thank you. I really appreciate that. And we have a couple of minutes left for people who are listening, who are feeling something inside, like a resonance. What advice do you have for them if they feel a resonance with the words that were spoken tonight?
Okay. If anyone feels a connection to Hercules, to the higher realms, to our Ethereum brothers and sisters who are working on these realms, like the Ashtar people, as well as the Alliance groups. The Intergalactic Mission is part of them, and Ashtaron Galactic Command, Intergalactic Command. So we have different groups. If you feel a pull towards any of these, contact Hercules on his sites. You can contact us on our sites, and we can help with at least guiding. Like Tim Beckley, with trying to guide people to get onto the path of the light. You want to be on the light. You don't want to be following dark magics and things like that because the magic brings in the dark side a lot of times. They're tricksters. So we want to stay as true to the path of the creator of the light and learn to discern. Learn to discern good from bad information when you're hearing it. Listen to your heart. Listen to your in pituitary pineal gland up there, the third eye section, listen to that part. If you have trouble listening, I think you test yourself, right? Hercules, they test themselves. I just tell kids, when I was a kid, I was telling people, you got to test yourself. Test yourself with things that you know are good and bad, or have friends talk to you about something and listen for the feeling. If the feeling feels off, it's wrong. If it feels, your guts feel weird, it's wrong. If it feels good and flutters and excited, it's right, or at least that way, to first learn how to discern. After that, your intuition really picks up on that. And you pray for wisdom. Pray for wisdom from Creator.
That's true.
Because when you praise the Creator, always praise Creator, because praise casts away the negative beings from around us. Praising and...
Or the lower astrals.
Lower astrals. Yeah, we always call them the lower astrals.
That's what I call them,
the playful ones. I hope that helps people, because if it feels right, in your heart, you're on target with something. So if hearing our voices and hearing this information or listening to Hercules and watching his shows, and just keep tuning in, because this is the time right now, this is the awakening time. Everybody's hearing about it, the awakening and awakening. But our solar system, our star, the planets are all going through changes, and the time has come, it's limited now, that this dimensional space where this planet is going through changes. So we have to make our way home to the higher realms. We want to get home to the highest realms, as we call home.
And this time we want to stay there.
And we want to stay there, stop incarnating back. We don't want to keep people coming back for just because they're angry. You know, it's like a loop they fall into sometimes. And I know some people out there, Hercules people, are saying, don't go to the light. We've been reading stuff like this, Phyllis and I, and we're going, what are they talking about, don't go to the light? They're saying, don't go to the light. Get away from the light. It won't take you to reincarnate. That's not true.
Yeah, I've run across.
Well, you run away from the light.
Anyway, they're going to cut us off in a few seconds.
Thank you,
and to be continued. Love you, too, and I will talk to you very soon before Friday, and I look forward
to it.
Okay, be well.
We love you guys. God bless. Adnebas Sugar.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you tuned in and listened to us live as we're speaking, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And for the few seconds we have left, we will stop with Golden Bough by Virginia Ackland.